top of fees up in the group as it's been.
Sorry.
No introduction.
Okay. So I volunteered to talk here just because we didn't have a speaker, so you shouldn't take it too seriously. Also, this is small part of large ongoing work with Don Zaire. And I have to say that throughout my entire career as a theoretical physicist, I never felt any closer to experiment than in this project, because every physical conjecture or prediction can be verified in a split second. Okay, so I'll start by explaining roughly what arithmetic topology is. We won't actually make close contact with that, but I think it's an amusing subject, and probably if there is anything you can take away from this talk, probably that's in what kind of context you can easily do it. So it's a bit based, it's a program first proposed or suggested by various people, including Clement Mumford, then who probably didn't even realize the name or what's this about, then more seriously by Barry Mazur, who actually made an important contribution, Kapranov, and further developed by Reznikov. So I'll just give you a list of people who were involved in this. So probably here I should also add Yuri Manin, Yuri Ivanovich, and so more recently Murashita, Chris Denninger, Adam Sikora. Well, I'm running out of space, so that's probably good enough. Many others. So it's roughly a program which relates three manifolds and various aspects of low-dimensional topology to algebraic number theory. And it's a correspondence, or vague correspondence, as I'll try to explain to you, in which three manifolds correspond to get associated to algebraic number fields, knots and links in three manifolds correspond to primes, and so on. So the precise dictionary which relates this to is known as Mazur-Kapranov-Reznikov dictionary, and it consists of the following. So first of all, as I already told you, so let me try to build it more systematically. Three manifold, which throughout this talk I'll denote by M, gets associated to some algebraic number field. So I'm just repeating. That part of the board, number field K. An example would be the simplest three manifold you might imagine is a three sphere, and the simplest number field you might imagine is Q. So these two in this correspondence get associated one to the other. Now, links. Oh, I should probably stop right there. Then, one of the obvious things we can try to associate to a three manifold is its cohomology, H n of m. And by this dictionary, it's associated to, well, in number theory, the corresponding aspect, well, the corresponding object is so-called a telcohomology. I will not try to define this or even write more specifically what it is a telcohomology of, but it turns out that there is a nice relation between these two, and the whole program, this arithmetic topology, started formulated when Mazur first noticed that he computed some of these groups and noticed that they all vanish up to some torsion in degree greater than 3. Yes?
So, you know, if you have a different gated group, do you have a different field on the right-hand side, or it's all the same when you think of the gated group?
Which gauge group?
Well, you have a perturbed gauge theory, so...
Right.
So you don't really distinguish them.
So far there is no gauge theory, so I'm just focusing at this stage on what these words mean. And in fact, in my talk, I'll need only the first line in this dictionary, so there is no gauge group yet. In the final story, there'll be dependence on the gauge group, I believe, but we'll have to wait till that comes out. So these are two cohomology theories on the corresponding sides, and many aspects work out quite nicely. So then just to continue this dictionary, let's see. What shall I say first? Now, as I told you, links and knots correspond to make it consistent. Links actually correspond to ideals in the ring of integers. So given a number field K, you can ask for its ring of integers. For example, for Q, the ring of integers is just Z, and you can easily work out what the answer is for other simple examples of number fields. And knots, which are kind of prime links in a sense that they consist only of a single component. So knots, which could be thought of as prime versions of links, correspond to prime ideals in okay. So I won't use much of this, so I'm just giving you a table to illustrate the flavor or some get to leave some dictionary used in this arithmetic topology. Perhaps one statement that I'll be able to, well, you'll be able to recognize will come in just a second. So another thing you might compare is the torsion part of H1, the first homology group. So torsion of H1 of M with integer coefficients. That's supposed to correspond to plus group of K, which measures the failure to factor numbers in the number field. Once you have the torsion, you can ask about the free part. So I'll call it H free of M, being H1 of MZ mod torsion. And here it corresponds to a group of units, O star of K, modular torsion, which in this case simply means modular roots of unity. Okay, these are natural concepts on both sides, which get identified with this dictionary. I have to say that the essential core of this arithmetic topology is facing this dictionary and then trying to recognize various statements on, say, geometric side and number-theoretic side, and you'll find striking analogies if you take a statement here and translate it to the other side.
Is there really a functor between...
No. In fact, I'm coming to the example where I'll tell you that it's actually a very vague dictionary. It's more like a physics. You have to believe that something interesting is going on, but it's not really a functor, and it cannot be taken too literally. So that's why it's not a branch of mathematics. It's a program. It's like one of the programs that you want to achieve or fulfill, and goal of this is to make sense of it more.
So there's no algorithm for assigning a field.
No.
An ideal to
it. No, exactly.
Don't you have some underlying idea how it goes? What is the motivation to start this
goal? Well, there are many pieces of motivation. So, as I said, I originally started in part because of Mazur's calculation, who noticed that this Atalka homology vanishes in a degree higher than 3. So you should think, if you're ever faced topology, then you start thinking about some three-dimensional objects. Moreover, there is a version of Poincaré duality here as well, called Artin-Verdier duality, which is very reminiscent of Poincaré duality in usual homology of M. So this kind of thoughts. So.
And anyway, Mazur in his career moved from topology to number theory.
So right. So
he's a natural person to follow.
Right. Exactly. So, partial answer to your question is that using perturbative gauge theory, we'll have some specific assignment of algebraic number field to a three manifold. So we'll make it a little bit more rigorous. Although lots of the structure I'm telling you now will not be seen. So that's a disappointment. So that's why it's actually everything I'm saying now, except for the first line, is actually not going to be important in my talk. But just to finish this dictionary part, so another thing, once you looked at various groups attached to manifolds or number fields, you can consider maps, and natural class on this side is to consider finite branch coverings. So such a branch covering gets associated, or it corresponds by this dictionary to a finite extension of our number field K to a bigger field L. And in the example I just gave you, namely in the case of the three sphere, you notice that S3, for instance, has no non-trivial which in this case means unbranched coverings. And likewise, the field Q, which we associate to it, has no non-trivial unramified extensions. Now, Poincaré conjecture, so the next and the last line in this whole table could be Poincaré conjecture, which is taking this dictionary and trying to translate what it would mean on this side, says that S3 is the only M with this property. But its translation on the number theory side would say that Q is the only number field which has no non-trivial unramified extensions, and that's clearly not true. Well, but it's very close, actually. So there are, it's not known whether the number of exceptions is finite or not, but all such fields can be characterized which fail to, which sit on the same, which satisfy this property, can be somehow characterized, and I guess morally it's very close to being true, although not quite right.
I mean, more
you could have infinitely many.
I mean, the conjecture is that, I mean, there should be infinitely many fields of stuff.
Okay, so
I mean, but there are, I mean, I don't know how you want to make it. I mean, there should be infinitely many.
So this is conjecture based on what?
Well,
what conjecture?
I think if you assume some very Lebesgue hypothesis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as far as, well, to my knowledge, I knew only that it's not settled whether there are finitely many or infinitely many of them. But anyway, so.
Does it work if you substitute instead of Q one of these other things that that's still true for it? Does the matching still work? Does it not work?
Oh, if you substitute something else for Q?
Yeah, I substitute a different field. That
no, there are actually, you don't want to give up this line, so there are many reasons to keep it. So I think the lesson to draw from this failure is, rather than trying to fix it, take this dictionary motivating at best. So it again, it's like physics, if you wish, so it cannot be completely correct. And It's good to, again, take this as a motivation and try to translate some of the known statements. Well, perhaps if Poincaré conjecture does not fulfill this idea, something else, and see how far one can get. So Mazur was, for example, trying to take the definition of Alexander polynomial in topology and see what would be the corresponding counterpart in number theory. And he found quite a beautiful link, which still remains one of the, I guess, main successful or elegant applications of this idea, so, or program.
So I should say, I mean, I don't know whether this helps you or not, but I mean, there are only finite dimensional imaginary infinite trust. That's amazing.
Right, and discriminants of those, of course, all we know. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I had on the back of my mind when I was saying that we can say something about how exactly it fails. As I say, it's actually very far from the topic I'm going to talk about. So
so maybe this is more like the analogy between the function field and the number field case in discrete valuation rings, where you can make translations of statements, but you don't expect a one-to-one.
Exactly, yeah, right. That's a good analogy.
If
you have the fundamental group on the left, what's the object
of the right?
Do
you have a guess?
Uh-huh. Just take the fundamental group of three manifolds. Does anybody, Daryl, do you know? It's definitely being discussed, so I guess. Okay, good, but at least I got you motivated, so. All right, so now I can go on to the second part of the title, which was something about gauge theory and gauge groups. So, given in general, given some manifold M, which for the moment doesn't have to be three-dimensional, usually we define quantum field theory. In fact, most of the known local quantum field theories are defined using infinite-dimensional path integral. So one considers this basic object Z, which in quantum theory appears all over. Z of M is integral over various fields. I'll call them by calligraphic A, whole set of them collectively, of some measure which is exponential to some coefficient 1 over h bar, where H bar is assumed to be very, very small, of a classical action functional of M and in this field. Okay. So what this does is that it allows to define this object, which is one of the basic observables as well as other observables in quantum field theory, as a formal power series in this variable H bar. So what this leads to is a definition of Z of M which is a formal power series, or you can say exponential of a of such of the following form. So it starts, if you apply a saddle point approximation to this infinite dimensional integral, what you find is that there is some value of this functional as zero called action, which appears as the leading term in this expansion where H bar is supposed to be very, very small. Plus you have various corrections suppressed systematically by powers of H bar, and here SM is a so-called perturbative and loop contribution which comes from summing over Feynman graphs with n loops in them. So for instance, S2 in some particular quantum field theory could be represented by summing over trivalent graphs with two loops. So this is one example. This could be another one. And in principle, depending on what function we start with, it could have more terms. So this definition is so-called perturbative definition of quantum field theory, and this is actually what quantum field theory is all about. This is what we teach our students in physics. And this definition is very systematic. It allows to start from this quantity, whatever it is, even though it may not be terribly well defined. The procedure of extracting these terms is well defined. Okay, so there is some systematic way to compute S0, S1, S2, and so on. Sometimes they badly blow up, and we have to say much more how we take care of it. But in principle, this is the most systematic thing we have in quantum field theory. So-called perturbative formulation. Okay, so I'll be actually interested in arithmetic aspects of the theory. Well, probably I should say a little bit more. These quantities in interesting, or most of the known examples of quantum field theories are either some finite numbers or diverging integrals. So I'll say a little bit more in what follows about the nature of such Feynman integrals. But first of all, in all realistic field theories, these quantities typically diverge. So it doesn't quite make sense to ask for numerical value of S0, S1, S2. Now, I'll restrict myself to topological quantum field theories. Those are, by definition, quantum field theories such that the entire partition sum, as well as such a asymptotic power series, are insensitive to the small variation of the metric on the manifold M. So, that's a very standard definition that 2Q of T is a Q of T modulo the metric dependence. And therefore, in topological quantum field theory, this entire thing, Z of M, as well as individual coefficients, are all topological invariants. Of the underlying manifold. Now, in this case, when we pass to topological version of, when we restrict ourselves to topological field theories, what often happens is that these numbers, S0, S1, S2, and so on, and the entire function, are actually just numbers, and typically very simple ones. They often count solutions to various PDEs and things like this. So typically what happens is that these numbers, Sn, belong to Q. So these are some rational numbers, and much more often, in fact, integer numbers. So then you could ask about whether this integrality means something, and typically often it does. So I'll be telling you about example of a quantum field theory, perhaps one of the first examples, so I'm at liberty to make a definition, where this is not quite the case, and we'll call topological quantum field theory arithmetic. If these numbers Sn are algebraic integers, and in fact will require even stronger condition that Sn belong to some number field K for all n. Okay. Again, as I say, in many of the examples that have been studied, this number field K is just Q, the field of rationals. And of course, my interest here will be in situations when that's not the case, when this is some finite extension of Q.
Do you know any examples where the SN generates an infinite extension?
Where what?
Do you know any examples where the SN generates an infinite extension of Q?
An infinite extension of Q.
You mean all the
SNs collected? Yeah. No. In fact, I know only very few examples even of this sort, which is on the in-between, being very tame, like here, producing rationals or something with very poor arithmetic content, or giving SNs which are infinite or divergent integrals. So.
Can you make an example for non-arithmetic
here? Sure. So, in fact, there is one relevant to me. So, first, there is example which has to do with geometry and topology of four manifold, and most of the known topological field theories which compute topological invariants of four manifolds produce Sn's which are integer numbers, simply because they count solutions to various PDEs. So, so example of this would be either Donaldson theory or Seiberg-Witten theory. So. Another example, which is actually much closer to the topic of my talk, but still of this sort, which is non-arithmetic in this sense, is the usual Trans-Hymans theory. So, and Trans-Hymans theory is defined by specifying the gauge group, which has been one of the questions already. And let me take it to be SU2 for concreteness, the most studied example. It's not important that it's SU2. What is important is that it's a compact group, as I'll try to justified by the end of the term. So in that case, it's known that a partition function of such theory is given by exponential of 1 over h bar is 0. I should say that, first of all, let me give you again the definition. So it's integral over dA of exponential of the Chern-Simon section, which is integral over 3 manifold of and then if you use this prescription that I mentioned in passing, this Feynman diagram prescription, you can compute this partition function as a formal power series or exponential thereof, which starts with a leading term, which is just Chern-Simon section itself evaluated at a classical solution to equations of motion. Then there is actually something slightly non-analytic in this h-bar expansion. There is a term delta over 2, where delta is an integer. And again, it can be understood, even if it bothers you in the moment, it's actually not as bad as it seems. And then everything else goes just as I said. You have a term suppressed by power of h bar, so just a constant term in the h bar expansion, plus the rest of the sum, which is sum over n from 1 to infinity of h bar to the n as n plus 1, where plus 1 is, if I want to keep be consistent with my notations, that the index refers to the number of loops in the in counting Feynman graphs.
Specify a level, or is it true for any level?
So tacitly, h bar is of course related to the level, so it's inverse of that. And if you know what level means, you also know that level going to infinity is the so-called classical limit. So here, h bar is in fact 2 pi over k, or in fact k plus 2. So, well, let me just use k. Then that's precise. Classical limit corresponds to sending h bar to 0. So I'll rather use small expansion parameter h bar, which will be more intuitive and helpful for later use. Okay, so we can. But let me tell you a little bit about each term in this expansion, although you've either you've seen it before and that's very familiar, or you didn't, and then what I'm going to say probably won't be too illuminating. But just to remind you, A0, again, is a Chern-Simon section Chern-Simon's functional evaluated on a flat G connection A. In fact, if you apply the variational principle, the saddle point approximation to this integral, you find that the saddle point is precisely at the precisely corresponds to solutions to the flatness equations, where curvature of A dA plus A of H A is 0, and every such saddle point leads to this perturbative expansion, where the first term in the expansion is simply the this integral evaluated at the solution to this equation. So next term.
Because by evaluating on recognition, can you mean something over?
Right, so in principle, one would also have to... Right, sum over flat connections. That's right. Yeah. But this is a discrete sum, in fact, often a finite sum, and let me not worry about it. But for every flat connection, there'll be a perturbative expansion like this, so that's the object of our interest. So, okay, good. So, in fact, before I go to this one, I should tell you what delta is. So, every flat connection, it lives on some flat bundle E, and therefore you can consider cohomology of free manifold M. So, from now on, of course, if I'm talking about Trond-Simons theory, I'm talking about three manifolds. So you could consider cohomology of this three manifold twisted by the flat connection. So if you consider a twisted differential, then the fact that it closes, that is close to zero, is precisely the flatness condition. So in terms of those cohomology groups, this factor delta has a very simple form. So, delta is basically some combination of Betti numbers of this twisted cohomology. So, it's 3 plus h1 minus h0, where hi is dimension of hi of the free manifold with a differential dA, which is this twisted differential. Now, likewise, S1, the first term in that expansion is 1/2 log
in the general formulation, in the expansion, you have only S0, S1, S2, you have your term like the log A, but you have it.
Right, that's right. So,
how do you make the definition? Because arithmetic means all Sn are in some K. Now, do you require anything about this term?
Right, so if this term appears, I would say that, it won't bother us in terms of whether things are arithmetic or not, because coefficient of this term will often be an integer or half integer. In fact, it has to be the case. So this is some kind of anomaly term from the field theory point of view, and it's very controllable, and coefficients of that cannot be arbitrary numbers. So in fact, bad inconsistencies would occur because, basically what this means is that here in front of this thing, you have h bar to the power delta over 2. And you could not have any random power, say h bar to power pi or some transcendental number. That wouldn't work. So therefore, coefficient of such term is always very restricted. So in arithmetic as well as non-arithmetic theories, it will be something discrete determined by topology of either manifold or the gauge field. And that's, so I'm giving you a particular illustration how that works. Okay, so then the next term in this expansion is related to Reisinger or Rademeister torsion of the three manifold. And again, if there is a non-trivial solution to this flatness equation, then it should be actually torsion twisted by flat connection. So this gives you a geometric interpretation of the first several terms in this expansion, but the general principle is the following, that
what's the T here?
T?
T of N.
T is the torsion.
Is
Reisinger torsion of three manifold M twisted by flat bundle E. So it's a ratio of determinants, where again determinants act on not just usual forms, but forms taking values in being sections of E. Okay, but the general recipe is the following, that this guy's Sn of M are defined as integrals over M to the 2n minus 2. So this is 2n minus 2 products of our 3 manifold with itself of some 2 form, which we have to take to wedge power 3n minus 3. So you can easily convince yourself that if this is a 2 form, then total degrees of course 6n minus 6. And since M is a 3 manifold, it works out. It's just the right dimension to integrate it. So I have to tell you what L is. L is, again, a 2 form on M cross itself. So I'll choose to parameterize one copy by variable X and the second copy by variable Y, which takes values in G tensor G, where G is the Lie algebra, in our case of SU2, but more generally, Lie algebra of the gauge group that we start with. And moreover, this, just like in all the previous terms, everything gets twisted by this flat connection A, this object L, which enters in the computation of the high order coefficients, also satisfies a simple equation. It's basically a Green's functional propagator, so that acting by operator dA, which already showed up before, we get a delta function supported on the diagonal in this space M cross M. Right, it's a self product, so you take tensor product, well, product of M with itself 2n minus 2 times. That's right. Okay. Now, in the version of the theory in which I presented it, which is this SU2 transimons theory, and in fact, more generally, in any transimons theory with compact gauge group, it turns out that these numbers computed as Feynman integrals, in fact, this integral over that many copies of M itself is precisely the Feynman integral. This is what implementing the rules, the general rules, which I was mentioning before, give to you. So in this case, this number turns out to be a rational number, and in fact, a collection of them is called such numbers are their geometric interpretation is that these are finite type or Vasiliev-like invariants. Even though I set up the theory for 3 manifold, it would be very easy to incorporate knots and links in the story, in which case these numbers would be precisely Vasiliev invariants, and in the case when we talk about 3 manifolds, these are basically 3 manifold analogs of finite type invariants.
S1.
Oh, S1. Yeah, S1 is a little funny. So, right, as you can see, something special happens in the very bottom of this sequence in the perturbative expansion. First of all, because S1 is naturally log of something, but then you actually should be asking what T is, whether this is rational or not. And for my purpose, I chose to write Z as exponential of this expansion, but then another thing is to actually exponentiate the series. and talk about expansion in HBOR. So here is starting, I don't know, with something expand over n in H and BOR, sorry, H to the n. And in that case, for instance, it won't take care of delta, but it will take care of this log term.
Yeah,
I don't think exponentiating will. I mean, I think it will take care of t. I don't see how it will mess up the other terms. In any case, it's true that obviously, for example, with this delta, obviously we need some extra care. It's a special term, and it's for a good reason that physicists call it anomaly. That something is very weird.
Just you have to be one half that it becomes square root.
Oh, you're worried about this half, I see.
No, the one half in front, log.
Oh, one, well, this half.
Okay. So if you do that, you have to bring in.
That's right. That's true. Right.
So with quantum topologies, we start with a second order finite type number. We don't care anything.
Exactly, yeah. So
that's all rational.
So you said this term is non-arithmetic. Where, which term?
Okay, let me make the following statement, that for this SU2 Trin-Simons theory, all these numbers Sn belong to Q, and to be on the safe side, let me say for n greater or equal than 2, because obviously I had to take care separately of the terms on the lower end, but what's important is that it's the entire tail. So all of them, for all values of n, as large as you wish, happen to be in Q, and these are precisely finite type, or also called Vasiliev invariants.
So I think the confusion is that non-arithmetic might have meant that K was, I mean, the values were transcendental, but what you actually meant was that the values were rational. When you call something non-arithmetic.
Oh, that's right. So when I call something non-arithmetic, I would if everything takes values in Q, that's still good enough, right? So just like here, except that it's a very boring case, very very simple arithmetic to Q of t. So its arithmetic content is not as interesting as one might hope. In particular, it does not produce anything for arithmetic topology, does not give you any interesting number field.
What does finite mean?
Here is just a definition, if you wish. So finite type, by definition, is the coefficient in the expansion of the perturbative Trin-Simons theory. So, again, if you can define, so this is definition to give is in fact for knots. So starting, I would have to generalize this theory to include Wilson lines and Trin-Simons theory. And in that case, one would define finite type invariant of a knot as an invariant which vanishes if you consider nth derivative of the invariant in the following sense, that just like think of ring of polynomials, you would define polynomial of degree n if differentiating at n times gives you 0. So you can define a derivative of a knot k. Notice the difference with the field k, which it was with a double line notation, to be such that in the crossing you change the, you take the formal difference between this type of crossing and this type of crossing. So if you apply this n times, and your invariant automatically vanishes for n's derivative of a knot, you say that it's of type n or smaller. So if it doesn't vanish for any smaller number of derivatives, then you say that it's precisely of type n. But anyway, I would have to give a much longer recourse into defining it for three manifolds. And this is just a comment in passing. So here I was trying to give the physics definition of such as coefficients as n in terms of Feynman integrals, and then when possible give a geometric meaning. So here I'm just saying that in geometry, these coefficients in the SU2 Schoen-Simons theory are what one might naturally call finite type invariants. Okay? Now, so let's see what one could possibly expect in general. What kind of answer one could hope to get in perturbative gauge theory, which always produces integrals of this sort.
Excuse me, can you still give a straight answer? Namely, the Schoen-Simons theory is non-arithmetic. Where do you see it's non-arithmetic? Is it because of S1?
No. I would say it is arithmetic if we disregard this anomaly at the lower end.
Okay.
So if we discard this delta as well as S1, then SU2 Schoen-Simons, I would say it is arithmetic, and the corresponding number field is Q,
okay.
Is field of rational numbers, because all the coefficients belong to Q. Well, this is finite type or Vasiliev invariant.
Still not an example of a non-arithmetic.
It is, that's right, it is not an example of non-arithmetic theory, it is an example of arithmetic theory which is very simple, which produces Q rather than any interesting number.
But those Sn, you say it's a finite type, and also Vasiliev invariant, are they really Vasiliev invariant?
Well, Vasiliev really refers to case of knots that I was briefly explaining, and finite type is a more general collective name for such invariants.
They are not exactly Vasiliev.
No, that's a difficulty. If the manifold is rational homotopy sphere, then this is a true theorem.
Okay.
If the manifold has the first homology has Z in there, then ready for it to be found with a finite type invariant.
So, but do you have definition of a Vasiliev invariant?
Oh yeah, this is called Suki invariant.
But are these S in?
Yes. Yes, it's a theorem. It's called
Suki
invariant, which
is 55. Okay, so think of again this integrals, which is typically what you get in perturbative definition of quantum field theory. You always get something of this form, which is integral over certain domain. In fact, various copies of your space time or manifold which you're studying. And there is some reasonably simple integrand that's involved in that. So let's see what kind of arithmetic properties we could a priori expect of such integral. So of course we could expect to get just rational numbers as in this example, or we could expect to get algebraic integers resulting Q bar. Of course, the worst case scenario would be that the answer is just some complex number to be slightly more general and closer to context that I need. I want to use complex rather than real numbers. There is something in between called periods, which is the following set of numbers. And in fact, first, the moment you think about this type of integral, you start thinking about periods, which are defined pretty much as you expect them to be defined. So a period is a complex number whose real and imaginary part are some absolutely convergent integrals of some rational function over domain D inside Rn for some n, which is also defined by inequalities involving rational functions. So, with integer coefficients, I should say. So, it's in general, such integrals, as many examples of such integrals we know, in fact, pi is a period, or any power of pi is also a period, are not rational numbers, neither they are algebraic integers, but the set of such numbers, even though they are transcendental, first of all, is countable, simply because the set of the integration domain, condition specifying the integration domain as well as the integrand is countable. Moreover, they form an algebra because you can add and multiply integrals. So even though these are some transcendental numbers, they somehow depend, the definition depends only on finite amount of information. And of course, arithmetic interest in these numbers is that typically any all special values of zeta functions and L functions happen to be precisely such periods. So this is a natural sequence, and in fact, in the application that I'm going to discuss, it's actually rather natural to expect answer these integrals, Feynman integrals Sn, to sit on this space. Why is that? Because I should now specify what problem I want to consider. Now, let's study Chern Simons theory, just like we did before, but take the gauge group to be non-compact, namely to take the gauge group to be SL2C, complexification of SU2. And this is a very natural choice if you're interested in geometry of hyperbolic three-manifolds, and any closed hyperbolic three-manifold can be written as a quotient of hyperbolic three-space by discrete group gamma, which is a discrete subgroup of SL2C, or more specifically PSL2C, which is the group of orientation preserving isometries of the hyperbolic space, and it's very natural to promote it to the gauge group. In fact, physicists can formulate a theory of 3D gravity as Chern-Simons theory precisely with this gauge group. This is not compact, and this is compact. So I'm switching gears and going to from theory which might be called or might not be called arithmetic, depending on precise definition, whether we include Q whether we count Q as an interesting algebraic number field, to a case which is truly arithmetic. So,
why do you need compactness?
Well, for many things, this theory is very well studied, and everything is known about all the coefficients I just told you. This theory is not so well studied, and the results I'm going to tell you are not published or do not exist. Physically, the problem is that once you have non-compact gauge group, the Hilbert space is infinite dimensional, so all the luxury of connection with conformal field theory and so on and so forth simply breaks down. So, in fact, as my punchline to which I'm already coming is that just making the simple change of promoting SU2 to SL2C makes theory much more, much richer and much more interesting. So it's more difficult, but it's also more interesting.
Is it true that for perturbation theory, it doesn't matter whether it's
SU2 or SL2C? For formal aspects, it does not matter because everything I said goes through, except that you have to think of SL2C flat connections rather than SU2 flat connections. What does matter is that typically on a closed 3 manifold, there aren't so many interesting SU2 flat connections. And that's what gives rise to a rather simple interpretation of the perturbative coefficients. But there are many more interesting SL2C flat connections on a 3 manifold. And in particular, on a hyperbolic 3 manifold, like this one, there is a canonical SL2C flat connections which simply corresponds to the SL2C structure induced from the hyperbolic metric. Okay, so that's what's very different. And
do you have trouble with the compactifying moduli space of that connection when the gate group is not compact? In the end, I mean, if you want to, like,
short answer is no, that I don't have trouble with that. Short answer is no, that there is no trouble with that.
No trouble?
No trouble. Let's talk about it afterwards. I can easily explain why there isn't. In fact, that's a wonderful subject, in fact, studied in our department here and related to a polynomial, which was, again, discovered by Daryl and others, but I will be happy to explain that a little later. So, in fact, that's what makes theory slightly more interesting. Now, in this transcendence theory, instead, you find the following. Well, first of all, you see that our integration domain, so in the definition of these integrals, Sn were defined as integral over m to the 2n minus 2 of some form 3n minus 3. And even before I tell you, or even without knowing much details about L, you see that the integration domain here is fits very well in the to produce a period because it's a quotient of H3 by some subgroup of by some discrete subgroup which has typically integer or algebraic coefficients, and you might expect that this integral would be here, well, optimistically. Of course, in general, it might be any complex number, but rather optimistically, it might be a period. So,
sorry, gamma doesn't have to be an arithmetic.
Right. So right. And therefore, you're saying that you would probably push the conjecture in this direction. So, instead, what happens really is that all these numbers actually sit at least for n greater or equal than 2. They sit in a fixed number field for all values of n.
Which depends on n.
Which depends on n, that's right. So this is, in a sense, like a realization of arithmetic topology, where you produce a sequence of algebraic integers which happen to sit in the same number field. What's a little disappointing is that this is a number field. Well, at least in many examples that we explored, it seems to be the same number field is directly relevant to the definition of this manifold. Namely, you can simply take the traces of elements in gamma, and they generate a field known as a trace field of a 3 manifold, and conjecture therefore is that for any hyperbolic 3 manifold, this perturbative expansion of the SL2C transcendence theory produces a sequence of algebraic integers in this particular number field. Okay, so I think my time is up, and probably that's a good time to stop.
U2 case, this is defined mathematically by using some differential geometry. This is the same thing for same case for SL2C as a mathematical definition.
No, it's very different. That's why, as I say, there is crucial difference when you, once you go from SU2 from compact group to non-compact. It's hard in physics and it's hard in math. So one definition, or for example, one way to justify the statement is to use connection between so-called Collard-Jones polynomial in the case when M is a knot complement. So many knot complements, in fact, pretty much all of them, except for torus knots, produce a nice hyperbolic three manifolds. And then there is yet another conjecture which says that partition function of this SL2C Trans-Simons theory has to be related to certain limit of that Collard-Jones polynomial, in which case you can simply compute these numbers. In fact, these are many examples that we studied.
So does this just work if M has finite volume?
Right, so here I'm assuming M of finite volume, right? Again, more or less to be on the very safe grounds and to have specific.
Do you want to explain
specific numbers?
The short answer to my question, or is it too long?
Well, we can talk right after. So I don't think it.
So earlier, you said there will be a finite, in a compact case, SU2, there will be a finite sum over black connections. But even, it's not a rational Amal's piece, but even in that case, it would be the integral over connections.
Right. Well, here there is a somewhat analogous issue, which involves, again, studying moduli spaces of flat SL2C connections, and more generally, in fact, I could say GC connections where it's a complexification of some compact group. But this is a beautiful theory, in fact. As I say, many people in the room worked on this. And, it's something that very nicely incorporates in this whole business.
Why do you believe this conjecture?
Well, because Don is very strong in computing, and we checked it in so many examples. So originally, conjecture was actually that it should be probably a period, which was a safer choice. But then it just happened to came out to be always an element of the trace fields, and a posteriori we came up with two independent arguments why this is working. But these are kind of heuristic arguments rather than proofs. So.
But you have a heuristic argument as well.
Right, we have a heuristic physics argument and heuristic mathematics argument why it should work. But
now, when you say you've computed many examples, do you mean
he means God has computed?
Right.
I computed only one example, so just for fun, as a physicist, I try to do a two-loop integral when this M is the complement of the figure 8 knot. Following all the definitions I just gave you, I literally sat through the computation, and it's very long and tedious, and that's the only example I did using all the definitions. Then, using this conjecture between Collard-Jones and SL2C Trans-Simons theory, which I had about 5 years ago, one can actually set up very easy calculation of the asymptotics of that Collard-Jones polynomial to extract lots of numbers for knot complements. And this is what Don did in lots of cases, up to very high order, and surprisingly they work.
So he's just done lots of cases up to very large n?
Yeah, up to very large n and for handful of knots, yeah.
But this is not known for, this conjecture is not known for a single manifold. Can you prove this?
Well, I can prove it for a three-sphere, in which case it also gives Q, because there aren't any interesting hyperbolic structures on three sphere. So you get back to more or less the same situation that you were in SU2 transignments, and then all coefficients are again rationals. So it's somewhat in parallel with this arithmetic topology where to three sphere you're supposed to assign Q.
But that's the only example for which you can actually prove it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, maybe later in the quarter you will tell us more.
I need to turn in the form to the office.